Hello, everybody, and welcome to Respect the Dead, the podcast where we don't.
Sweaty, it's no surprise that everyone celebrated your demise, and now worms are eating your eyes. So don't you worry your rotting head as you sleep in your sodden bed. It's time to respect the dead.
Before we get into today's episode of Respect the Dead, I'd like to read out a 5-star review that we got over on Apple Podcasts from Closet Dork. This podcast had me laughing at my desk and struggling to breathe. The commentary is so snarky and beautiful. I have no doubt that there is potential for the show to be one of the big names in the future. The hosts have amazing natural chemistry, and their storytelling and research truly shine. I'm beyond excited whenever a new episode drops, even if they are covering a person I've never heard of before. I'm telling everyone I know about Respect the Dead. Thank you so much for that review, Closet Dork, and we hope you continue listening.
I'm mainly Mandy.
I'm Hoots.
And I'm Kaelin Conrad.
So for this week's episode, I thought I would bring you all a special worm feast straight from home. That's right. Today I am bringing you a Mainer, and not just any Mainer either. A man who tried multiple times to be president of the United States and failed every single time. He was known as the Continental Liar from the state of Maine. Yes, today we are talking about James G. Blaine from my state.
I've never heard of it. James G. Blaine?
I kind of knew the name in a very general sense, but I don't remember us ever sitting down to like learn about him in school or anything like that. So this was a very interesting journey for myself to learn about this guy who's a really big deal, apparently.
Feeling like he needed a better campaign manager if he ran for the United States president several times, and Kaelin and I have never heard of him.
James Gillespie Blaine, that's his full real name. So I guess technically he was not a tried and true Mainer. He was born in West Brownsville, Pennsylvania on January 31st, 1830. His father was a landowner and a businessman. So they were, you know, pretty relatively comfortable. He gained a reputation for being fiercely invested in debating. And I wrote in parentheses, debater. yep, a little bit of
he's
a debate,
such a
bro.
Vosh. He's such a Vosh.
Yep, he's Maine's Vosh. Yep.
He's like if Vosh played the person running the convent in Sister Act 1.
Yes.
I'm just like looking at him right now and I'm like, these are some vibes that I'm getting.
Drop an image in the chat.
Yes. Oh, yeah, if you want to share an image. I have some other images later, but if you want to look at those.
Oh, he kind of looks like that guy from BuzzFeed Unsolved, the tall one.
Oh, I don't think I know that.
I am What's getting a little like Sutherland Family vibes from him. Like the Donalds or the Kiefers.
Yeah, you know, I can see a little bit of that. Yeah. For sure. So like, yeah, he gained a reputation pretty early on in school when he was still a student for just like endlessly being able to argue with people, like basically until the other person relented because they wanted to like, you know, go eat or sleep or something. That was just kind of like his thing. He graduated from it is now known as Washington and Jefferson in 1847. And then he was a teacher for the next 6 years. He married Harriet Stanwood, who was a teacher originally from Maine, in the June of 1850. Initially, they married in secret, just in the presence of a few friends. But then later, they got married like the following year in March. Apparently, he was worried about some legality about how they got married or something. This marriage would later be criticized as being a shotgun marriage. Whether or not that's true is kind of hard to say. But they did get married after about 3 months, I think it was. So maybe. Hard to tell.
It was also a long time ago. Marriage?
Have you never heard that term, Kaelin? Shotgun wedding? It's basically when people get married because someone gets pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that never really applied to my life, I guess. So I never really needed to pay attention
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about it.
You know, I have to get shotgun married.
I'm like, I will not get anyone pregnant, and I'm not entirely sure I am allowed to get married. So
then no worries. Harriet would forever be in charge of their finances, as Blaine was extremely careless with money. Like, he just had no awareness about money. So she had to, mm-hmm. she had to be on top of, like, I guess, like, he would have regularly just kind of forget to pay things. So she had to be on top of everything.
Forget.
Yeah, quote unquote, forget. Yeah.
Same. Honestly, oh, by the way, same.
He was a Republican, by the way. We'll talk more about that later. So eventually they would have 5 children total, though their first died in infancy, their first son. They spent many vacations in Maine. And during those times, he actually became friends with the owners, with the editors of the Kennebec Journal, which, for those of you, since you're both not in Maine, the Kennebec Journal is one of the major publications here in Maine. Little local humor for you. We sometimes refer to it as the Kennebec Urinal. Ha ha. Because we're very clever. It's not the best. I mean, to be fair, the Portland Press Herald has its issues too, but, like, yeah, it's, that's just kind of what it's known as here. So eventually, because they all became so buddy-buddy, he actually moved his family to Augusta, Maine in 1854 and became an editor and part-time owner of the Kennebec Journal. The paper at the time was a Whig publication, which is spelled W-H-I-G, just in case anyone's confused. Wait,
not like I was Whig, so interested Whigs. For a second.
The Whigs, like the Whig Party, was the Whig Party loyalists? Wait, no, this is like way after the revolution. Who were the Whigs again?
This is way
again?
After. So the Whigs, I really am bad at American history. But if I remember correctly, the Whigs are kind of like proto-Republicans or something like that.
Okay.
Like they were, maybe future Mandy can like insert a quick definition here.
Future Mandy, like, why are these girls saying Whig to me?
I have a hard
right
time
now
with this part of history. This is like, you know, this is before okay the internet existed. So
Wikipedia is telling me the Whig Party was a political party that espoused traditionalist conservatism in the United States during the middle 19th century.
Yeah.
So that's it. They're conservatives.
They're conservatives. Yeah. Which, yeah.
Conservative conservatives, 19th century conservatives.
Yeah. Like old school conservatives. So
they,
like, it started off
as themselves, some black people.
Big time. So they started off as like that kind of publication, but it became very pro-Republican with the creation of that party. Because this is around the time that the Republican Party, as we know it now, was created. And he was a founder of the Republican Party. He was very pro-Republican. In 1856, he attended the first national convention of the Republican Party, and he served on the Maine legislative from 1858 to 1862 when he was elected to the House of Representatives. So like I said, he was very pro-Republican, and he basically would just like hitch up his buggy with his children, his wife, and some belongings. And they would just travel city to city, town to town, all across, like up and down the coast. And he would just be espousing Republican ideals. Like that was what he was really good at. Mm-hmm. He was a very skilled orator. Exactly. He was doing rallies. He was garnering support. He was doing his rallies. He was kind of known for like holding on to people's hands. Like he would shake people's hands, but then he would hold on to them in conversations. So there's a story. Yeah, there's a story about him shaking a woman's hand, but then getting distracted by a friend and not letting go of the woman's hand. And every time she would try to pull away, he would just squeeze tighter and just not notice what he was doing.
Okay, crazy like though.
One of those little Chinese finger traps.
Yes, a person. It is. Exactly, but a person. And eventually she got free when her lover came over to him and distracted him enough to finally get his attention.
Her lover.
That's what it was written as, her lover.
Why
came
is
over
the story
and was like,
so, like,
hey.
French?
So, I mean, there, all these stories are very old. This is like before the, you know, 1900s. So.
Okay, that's fair. Her lover.
Yeah. And he
my
he
lover
did eventually
is usually what I say when it's illicit.
Yeah, that too. So eventually her lover, yeah, got his attention and he released her and did apologize profusely, apparently.
Does he not know?
I guess he just got distracted. He was just like completely. He was talking to somebody else and was just holding that hand.
But then every time she tried to pull away, he increased his grip. You said,
yeah,
like that doesn't sound like an accident.
It's like, I don't know if he thought he was holding his friend's hand. I don't know what happened here.
But even if your friend was like trying to pull their hand out of your, do you know what I'm saying? Like, imagine holding onto somebody's hand. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to pull it out. That's a very clear like feeling, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you just like tighten and, like, tighten. Like eventually you're hurting someone. Like that
your
is like
lizard brain is like, no.
Yeah. But it's a weird. Is that what your lizard brain would do? My lizard brain would be like, oh my God, I'm still holding onto this person's hand. I'm so embarrassed. He was like, you're not getting away from me.
His lizard brain was like, no, hold harder.
I can see myself in the midst of like an anxious episode, just being like, I don't know what to do right now. Maybe I squeeze tighter. I don't know. Like maybe if you were like really anxious and not being very self-aware, maybe you could end up in a weird spiral. Mm. I don't know. I think it's still weird.
I'm like, it sounds fake. I think you did it on purpose. I think it was a power thing, when you're, book one.
Maybe it is on purpose. Maybe it's like when your cat like spends a couple of seconds in your lap and you're like, no, I want this more. I'm gonna fucking hold you in my lap longer, and the cat's like, "Please, no, I don't like laps." And you're like, "You're my lap." And you're talking to somebody else, and you're trying to make it not a big deal.
Even though the cat's like wiggling and clearly trying to
Okay, I do think it's like that, but it's with a human woman instead of a cat, which is now it's weird. It's like it's not as weird when people do that to their cats, but this is like a woman at like a rally.
It's a real woman.
It's like a real human woman.
It's a real human woman.
Like,
just promise you'll like it.
I love you. Why would you stay? I love you so much.
Blaine thought women were the cats. Real? That is now canon. okay, so he had a huge part in creating the Republican Party in Maine. He did so much. He chose people for important offices. He raised and spent lots of money towards that end. He sought press coverage, and he set meeting times. He campaigned relentlessly for other Republicans. His house actually became kind of like a meeting place for Republican matters. Like his children, there were a lot of stories the children shared of like, oh, is this like these dashing Russian naval officers would just be over. And sometimes they'd give us candy or other Republicans, like politicians, businessmen.
Sketch.
Like their house was basically a meeting place. And actually his house is called the Governor's House now in Augusta, Maine. And that's where all the governors stay in Maine. And it's right next to the state house in Augusta. And I've driven by there like so many times, like as a kid and as an adult. So
and
I'm
all
very
these
familiar.
Like weirdos were hanging around his kids.
Yep. Yep. His kids and his wife just constantly.
That's cool. Sus. That's grooming. This is Republican grooming.
This is Republican grooming.
Indoctrinating children into an ideology when they should just be playing trucks and dolls or whatever the fuck. Babies right.
Being a politician around small children is grooming.
Yeah.
And this is the old timey time. So like playing with like a hoop on a stick or something, right? That's what they would do.
Hoop on a stick is for boys.
Yeah. He had a couple of boys. So those boys could have done that. And the women could have been trot to do budgeting like their mother. So in 1868, he was elected Speaker of the House. He earned the nick. So he had a ton of nicknames, as we're going to see. I'll tell you all of them later, but one of the ones he earned, oh, whoops, my thingy scrolled away. Hang
on. I like that he
on.
Earned it.
well, like really I mean, earned it. we'll say.
Yeah, did he earn it?
Earned is a verse. He was given the nickname, the Plumed Knight, from Colonel Robert Ingersoll of Illinois.
This is homophobic. The plumed knight. It's like you can just knight. Call him an Epsler.
But this was actually somebody on his side who was giving him this nickname. When the colonel offered his name as a nomination at the National Republican Convention of 1876, so he was offering up his name as a possible president nominee. So this was like the first time he like ran for president. I believe this is the first time. Ingersoll said it was as if Blaine was, quote, throwing his shining lance full and fair against the brazen forehead of every traitor to his country and every maligner of his fair reputation.
So this is like, this is some very like modern Republican shit. He's like literally appealing to like all of these fucking haters.
Yep. Wait, was somebody trying to ruin his reputation?
Happy 9/11 to all the haters and losers.
Yes. Yes. There's actually going to be some interesting comparisons made later that I was going to share.
Is there cancel culture?
There's scandals. There's some scandals and some interesting stuff.
I love a scandal.
There's a few. True. He had a few. Actually, we're about to jump into one right now. So during this time, what year was this again? 1876. So in 1876, when this is happening, the infamous Mulligan letters come to light, which is a whole thing.
I love a group of letters.
Yeah. So Mulligan what happens letters. Is there are accusations that he has also become some kind of bond salesman for the Little Rock and Fort Smith Railroad. So there's all this like concern that represents a conflict of interest. On top of this, he allegedly sold depreciated Little Rock bonds for a loan that he never paid back for $64,000, which was to Union Pacific. And the allegation was basically that they forgave this loan that he took out as some kind of quid pro quo for him, like helping them out, basically helping out the railroad.
Do you know what year this was?
So this is 1876. And I think the letters and the allegations are from like a couple of years before this. So okay. In the years leading up. And this is kind of like a theme of his time in office is like all these like allegations of like potentially showing favoritism to his own financial interests, which again, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? A little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a little.
So he's in his 40s at this point too?
I think so. Yeah. Cause he was born in 30. So
yeah,
this would be in his 40s. Yeah. He's still pretty young. He's still pretty young.
The 60 whatever thousand is around 13 and a half million.
Oh, by today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of money.
Jesus.
So there was even a subcommittee that investigated him, and a James Mulligan, hence the Mulligan letters of the name of the affair, claimed to have letters that proved his corruption. But this is interesting. So somehow Blaine managed to get a hold of these letters. Now, one source I read said that it was because he maybe bribed him somehow, managed to buy them off of him. But the story that Mulligan said, and I love this, is that he snatched them out of his hands and then ran away. I just love that image so much. Being like, oh, look behind you. And he just grabbed them.
This is the 1800s. They still believe in witchcraft. There's no photocopiers. Like, this man does not have a copy.
Yeah.
He's literally like Debo.
Like, literally, yoink.
Yeah. Exactly.
I imagine really that he's like
the true version.
In my mind's eye, he's running away like with like a little fucking waddle. Like he's like
no, yes, 100%.
I like that you just demonstrated the waddle too. Thank you.
Like he's running away with like he's got a wedgie because his pants are so high because it's the 1870s.
Oh. And the other guy's just like, fuck, why did I bring those out here and wave those around in front of him? I could have just been like, oh, I'll release these letters, not like, I'll release these letters I'm holding.
Right? Why did I hold them out so somebody could grab them?
I like, yeah, like, no, like retros- in retrospect, I probably shouldn't have held them out towards him. Like, oh, okay.
Maybe this is why Blaine was practicing his iron grip with other people, because he didn't want letters ripped out of his hands.
Or because he was able to rip letters out of other people's hands.
Exactly. He was strengthening himself. I've got
bad news about letters in general. They're very easy to rip. So it doesn't really matter how strong your grip is.
Okay, well, then why was he doing so many fist kegels?
One, fist kegels. Two, three. God damn it, why is this an audio medium?
We're all doing fist kegels now.
We're flexing our fists. We're flexing our fists. Pretend we're getting stronger.
I don't know about you, but I'm doing fist kegels and real kegels at the same time.
We're multitasking. Yep, and one, and two, and
three.
I don't exercise.
Kaylin's like, no, thank you. Supposedly, one last thing about the letter. The last line of the letter was allegedly "burn this letter," which critics of Blaine would later chant at him. There's some fun chants throughout this story, by the way. Funny. We're going to talk about
I love a chant. Oh, there's some chants.
The thing that I love about this story, as we'll see, is that there's so much like it, this is all, you know, this is 1800s. So this is, you know, 19th century like shade. It's just so like petty and so simple. And I love it. It's just
I'm obsessed.
It's amazing. So apparently this whole like him trying to get this nomination from the Republican Party to be president was extremely stressful, especially with the scandal coming out. So his health did suffer, which he apparently was a bit of a hypochondriac. So how much of his health was in his mind and how much of it was real is hard to say. But apparently at one point he did lose consciousness for like a couple of days, like in the middle of this.
Jeez.
His critics claimed that this was all theatrics. This was all like a ploy to get sympathy.
It was.
But it's possible it's real. It's kind of hard to say because he had like stress related illness throughout his life. So it's okay, it might but, like, be real.
Do stress related illnesses make you go to sleep for 3 days? Like, have you ever heard of that? Like,
I mean, okay, as someone who deals with mental health shit,
used to exist?
Depression sometimes does, I need to just be like laying down for a couple days.
Okay, but there's a difference between like taking to the bed and like falling over and waking up 3 days later.
And he was out with his family when it happened too, apparently. He was like out walking and he just like collapsed and then he was out of it.
He is an extra bitch. He wants the attention. He wants people to be talking about him. He wants people to be focusing on him. And what better way to do that than you're out with your family, nobody's listening to you, and you're like, you know what? You're going to act like I'm not here, trying to act like I'm not here when I fall over in the middle of this pathway here and then fall asleep for 3 days. Like, there's no way that he was not faking this. But sorry to go on.
No, it's fine. Because it's, again, this is, you know, before like the internet or, you know, were telephones even a thing at this point? I don't even fucking know. There were rumors he had died because people just heard he collapsed. So people thought he might have died. So because of the scandal and then everyone was so concerned about whether or not he was, you know, alive, he lost to Rutherford B. Hayes for the Republican nomination.
Because he was dead.
Because they thought he was dead, yep, or might die. So then in 1879, there was, this is a bit of Maine history I did not know anything about. Apparently, there was some kind of electoral crisis in which both the Republicans and the Democrats in Maine claimed victory over the election. So then the Democrat, because at the time it was a Democratic governor who had office, turned the state house into a fortress and the Republicans besieged it.
What?
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we barring doors? What? Are there sharpened sticks pointing outward at like a like a 40-degree angle?
Not
like,
clear.
What do we think fortress
there,
here?
There was a whole thing I had to research a lot into later on in this story. So I didn't get into this part of it as much. But it just sounds like they, yeah, they basically, all the guards, like, shut everything down. They had armed men everywhere. And the Republicans were trying to find a way into the building. And apparently he almost got assassinated in the middle of all of this. He didn't. But because his house was literally right next to the state house, his house became kind of like the base of operations for all of this, strategizing to try and get into the house.
Wow.
Can I say that I don't understand history? Yes, I used to have a history podcast, but I don't, when you say 1800s, to me, like, I both picture like steam engines and castles with moats. Like, there's no context for me. So when you're like fortified the state house or whatever, I like picture like a drawbridge being like pulled up and like a bunch of Republicans on horses being like, how are we going to get across this moat?
Well, he had a buggy and stuff. So like, I think they had like, this is the time of like motorized vehicles. Okay. But there's definitely steam engines. The state house,
right? I like that.
Having been to the state house a few times myself, I don't think it ever had a moat that I'm aware of. because it's like kind of in the middle of Augusta, and it's pretty where it's, I mean, the coast isn't that far away, but it's pretty landlocked where Augusta is, at least where the state house is. Like, it's very much inland. So it's not a very like marshy area or anything. It's very hilly in Augusta. But I mean, maybe there was a moat at one point. It's quite possible. I wouldn't be surprised.
I'll readjust my thinking.
Okay. I think it's wild how there's like a Republican insurrection.
Yeah. Again, interesting similarities happening in the, like, I every now and again, I had to stop and be like, wait, this is what year?
Yeah.
Like, excuse me?
At a time when like we're literally having like a case about an insurrection. Little tiny insurrection. You probably haven't heard of it.
Just a little. It wasn't a big deal. It was fine. Yeah. Anyway.
It was fine for the most part. Only one person died. More people died at Action Park than died at the insurrection.
More people died at Action Park. Where's that t-shirt?
Insurrection Park. I can't.
Insurrection Park. Okay. After that whole crisis, apparently eventually it was solved. I don't know exactly in what way, but it was solved apparently. After that, Blaine was appointed to the Senate. He lost another bid to become president in 1880, and then he resigned to become Secretary of State. He worked closely with President Garfield, and apparently they were like really, really close. They were good friends. They got along really well. Around this time, he and his family were working on constructing a new mansion in Washington, D.C., which apparently was going to be their third house. So that's they had the house in Augusta. They had this house that they were building. And then apparently there was another one. I think it was a vacation house. Yeah. And his critics noted that he managed to build quite a bit for not having a lot of financial resources. And he definitely had some, because he had like his investments in like, in mining and stuff like that. He was really good friends with Andrew Carnegie. And he still owned, he had money left over from owning the Kennebec Journal. So like, he had money. But there was definitely some questions about like, you know, how much of this money was truly his and how much was he investing that maybe he wasn't supposed to be, conflict of interest, all of those, the financial scandals were happening.
Yeah.
And of course he denied everything. He was very adamant that, that this was just because he was a public figure, basically. It's cancel culture. He was basically saying it's cancel culture.
It's cancel culture run amok, honestly.
Yeah. When the president, Garfield, was assassinated and the next president, which was Chester Arthur, took over, Blaine was replaced. And then they had, because of all of this, they had to sell their house in D.C. You know, so sad for them.
So now they're down to two houses, one of which is a mansion. Poor baby.
Aww.
So hard. So hard for him.
I want to see the Cribs episode for this.
Just one 19th century fucking douchebag.
I'm pretty sure you can take tours of the house. I've never done it before, but I'm pretty sure you can like tour the house if you wanted to.
Here's the straw house where me and my wife have sex through a sheet. This is where the magic happens.
This is where the magic happens. This is where we soak.
This is where I complain about nearly dying in this one corner.
I have my buddy Ephraim come and jump on the bed so that we get some fresh milk.
Or not Ephraim.
Oh, Ephraim. So some of his politics included supporting the Chinese Exclusion Bill, which is exactly what it sounds like. It was barring Chinese immigrants from coming to America. Yep. He was really interested in Pan-Americanism, which is the like reciprocity treaties with Latin America nations and opening markets for American goods south of the border. He was described in one of my sources as an Anglophobe, which was somebody who was extremely against England.
Me too, honey. Me too. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm back in.
I kind of can't get mad about that, honestly. In 1875, he proposed a constitutional amendment that would have prohibited any public money coming under the control of religious institutions, which... I'm actually all for, but the proposal
he sounds pretty based other than hating Chinese people.
Yeah. Right. Like it's really not that terrible. The proposal though led to accusations that he was anti-Catholic, despite the fact that his wife was one. And he did also.
I'm like, hasn't? That feels a little okay. Like, are Catholics asking for it? Yes.
Right.
I mean, look at the way Neil Farrell from The Liberal Cook right now.
There you go. And he also advocated for the expansion of the American Navy and military. So very, very pro-America, big time, you know.
Yeah, America first.
Type.
Yeah, like, America, big time guy.
Like the whole reason he wanted to create treaties and such with, you know, Latin America was because he wanted to basically like outdo England. Like that was kind of the whole point is like, oh, we can do again, England, but better.
Sounds pretty based. Like,
yeah, like
fuck England, especially in the 19th century. Like I can imagine looking at England and being like, fuck those guys.
Right. Like, yeah.
Let's just do whatever we can without them.
Yeah, right? No, totally fair. Okay, so one of my favorite sources I found about Blaine was this whole, like, little, like, nemesis that he had. He had a nemesis in the form of Thomas Nast, who was a political cartoonist and artist, most famous for his depiction of Santa Claus, which, like, the modern-day image of Santa Claus, Thomas Nast is the one who basically came up with that. He made a series of cartoons criticizing Blaine. And in fact, I have links for you that I'm going to send
in
the
chat. Give me.
Mandy, is Thomas Nast of Condé Nast?
I don't know. That would be maybe a question for future Mandy. I could maybe look that up later.
Of the future Mandy Nasties.
Hey everyone, Editing Mandy here. I just did a check of that, and no, Thomas Nast is not at all related to Condé Nast. And apparently that's a very common question because that came up immediately. So the answer is no.
Okay, so here's one image. Remember how he was called the plumed knight by that one colonel? So this was a very common image that Nast did.
An ugly ass hat.
It's a very good, and this was like very common. Like he would constantly like have these very flamboyant hats for Blaine in his cartoons. No, he had like a normal hat,
big feathers.
But he did have a hat.
He just likes a plume.
He had like a top. I think he had like a top hat.
He was beheaded.
I don't think it had the big feathers on it. I think that was added for.
Sorry, effect. What's his bro's name?
To make him look plumed.
Which bro?
the dirtbag you're talking about.
That's James Blaine.
James Blaine is the normal guy. The other guy is Thomas
and
Nast.
And the other one's Thomas Nast.
Who's making fun of him.
Okay. Yeah. I have one other cartoon of him. Oh, and here's the other cartoon I have that Nast did. this one is very much like, again, the shade is very simple in comparison to like modern day shade.
Today, but yeah.
Like the whole point is like, oh, look at him, like eyeballing.
I'm like, why isn't every single item in this image labeled with a different,
like, right?
set of words that explain to me how I'm supposed to feel.
It's so different from modern cartoons that we have for political stuff where everything's labeled. It's just like a very subtle, like, oh, he's like sort of shiftily looking at the president's chair in this one.
What is that written at the bottom? Is that German?
Oh, you'd have to zoom in on it.
Yeah, I'm zooming. She looks.
It's old timey English, so it's hard to read.
Oh, yeah. Now that I zoom in, I can tell that these are angel long.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know we mock Ben Garrison for fucking labeling everything too much, but I feel like we could do a little bit more labeling here.
I could take like two more labels on this one, other than like zooming into this like German at the bottom that's like to get her.
to get her. Yeah, like it's a lot different from the modern style for sure. Maybe that's what came
up. Well, I'm sure he was very upset by this.
So Nast is kind of interesting. So Nast was also a Republican. So it wasn't that he had an issue with Republicans. He just specifically hated Blaine. He accused Blaine, for example, of supporting the exclusion of Chinese immigrants to gain favor with voters, not because he actually was morally opposed or anything.
His problem is that he didn't hate Chinese people enough.
Basically, yeah. Like, oh, you don't like authentically. Yeah,
exactly. You're like, you're a clout-chasing fake racist, and I hate you for it.
I didn't find this one. Maybe it's around somewhere. I just didn't look deep enough. But apparently one time he drew him as a magnet. And the whole joke was that he was, quote, weighing down the Republican Party with his scandals.
Do magnet? Why wouldn't he use like an anchor or something?
He used a magnet. I don't know why.
For that's scandals? Just what they, but then, I think it's because it's one of his. Him down?
I think one of the Blaine's nicknames at one point was the Magnetic Man, because he was so like magnanimous and people liked him. So it's like, oh, we'll draw him with a magnet. It's like turning it against him.
Yeah. And I'm starting to realize why What's His Nuts Ben Garrison really labels those drawings. Yeah. I'm like, this isn't hitting home for
me. Do not misunderstand me.
It's very different. And usually those that were attacked or criticized by Nast didn't bother fighting back, but Blaine did, which was very unusual for the time. Some of the people, including, I think, Blaine as well, criticized Nast, basically calling him a hypocrite because he ignored many other failings of other Republican Party members. Like, he didn't criticize them for abandoning Black civil rights, but then he would attack like the political corruption of the Democrats, and was largely supportive of most Republicans other than Blaine. Like, he was he was all for Republicans except for Blaine. So it was this kind of interesting thing where he was like, oh no, all this other stuff is fine. I'm fine with us excluding Chinese people. But I draw the line at supporting this one man.
I can excuse racism, but it's literally that community gift.
It is. He was the living embodiment of that. Okay, so back to Blaine. So Blaine made another attempt, and this is like the big attempt that almost succeeded, for the presidency in 1884. He got the Republican nomination this time, but then he lost to an extremely narrow margin to Grover Cleveland. Excuse me. And the campaign was said to be very vicious. Cleveland was accused of being a father to an illegitimate child, and a bad father at that. But then the Democrats also called Blaine's marriage a sham, and also accused him of having fathered a child before marrying Harriet, which, as far as we know, is not true.
Debates back then were,
is he gay?
Like, what was it?
What would make the marriage a sham? What makes like a straight marriage a sham? Are they calling him gay? Or like, what's the deal?
So you remember earlier how I mentioned that they accused it of being a shotgun marriage?
Oh,
I think that's why. They were saying like, oh, she doesn't like, there isn't any actual love here. There isn't any actual like, you know, whatever connection. It's just that she got pregnant out of wedlock and then you two got married later. Okay. And as far as we know, that's not true. So it's a little, you know,
I'm shady, like almost like, does that matter? Is that illegal? Like, does that, it, like, I mean, does it really not make a difference? Like,
and it is interesting too, because like
just the U.S. president debates back then were so fucking petty. It was just like, yeah, right. Well, your wife's a bitch.
Basically. Your wife's a bitch. Your child would have been a bastard if you were more honest. It's like, well, okay, like, yeah, yes, that's what we're doing.
No need to get personal, sweaty.
And apparently the supporters for Blaine and on that side of things, they came up with a chant for Cleveland's whole scandal that was like, the chant was something like, ma, where's pa? Was the chant
Jesus
that
Christ.
The anti-Cleveland people came up with. And at the same time,
where's your
the
dad,
people that are,
you little shitty child?
Where's your dad? And then at the same time, the Blaine opponents are screaming the thing like burn this letter from the previous scandal. And then they were also shouting my favorite chant of this whole story, which is so unoriginal. It's James Blaine. Wait, hang on. Let me find it because I want to make sure I'm saying it right. Okay, it's Blaine, James G. Blaine, the continental liar from the state of Maine.
Sorry, imagine chanting that, though. Imagine being, like, at a rally and you're like,
no,
wait,
that's a tongue twister.
Blaine, James G. Blaine, continental liar from the state of Maine.
Continental liar from the state of Maine.
Yeah.
And then you have to start again, and I'm like, wait, what was it? G. James Blaine.
Yeah.
That's a terrible chant.
It's a terrible chant. And also, I obviously didn't get a chance to read it, but I found on Amazon that there's a book called The Continental Liar from Maine, from the state of Maine, that's about Blaine. So that's like a name of a book. Just like from the
Why is he specifically the Continental Liar? Because I know we're all part of the continental United States, but like why?
Maybe it's just because he was such a big figure in the continental U.S. I don't know. That's just part of the chance. I think it just fit into the rhyme they were trying to force to make a thing.
He only matters outside of the islands.
Yeah. Something like that. There was around this time, there was a NAST cartoon that showed him with a spotless reform shirt, having put his legs through the sleeves. So scathing.
What?
Because he's a dum-dum?
Yeah, because he's not smart and he doesn't understand reform, apparently.
Where do my legs go?
Yeah. The most scathing.
Is that what he sounds like?
Yes, you nailed it. Good job. That's what he said right there.
I got him. Doesn't want to put on a goddamn shirt.
Fucking got him.
And the most scathing, this is multiple sources called this the most scathing political cartoon against Blaine. So here it is. This one is by Bernhard Gillum, and it's called, okay, I'm going to pronounce this wrong for sure. Pyrene before the Chicago Tribune. Yeah, it's in the chat. So the description.
Boxer briefs?
Yes.
Not these H&M boxer briefs.
This is the most scathing one. The description, and again, I'm probably not pronouncing some of these words right. Drawing upon Pyrene before the Areopagus. Areopagus, an 1861 painting by Jean Lennon Jerome, in which Pyrene's innocence is proved by her great beauty. Gillum showed Blaine as a nude model revealed to an audience of mugwumps and other Republican reformers as the tattooed man, covered with the indelible marks and blemishes of his shady past. So basically, it's an image of him naked with all his scandals written on his body, and everyone's staring at him.
And a bib that says magnetic pad on it for some reason.
Yes.
He's got a bib because he's a little baby.
Because he's a little baby.
You know what? I like this one. This one is labeled.
And just for a little more context, the mugwumps are basically the equivalent of the Never Trumps, except for Blaine. So they specifically did not like Blaine, and that was like their whole thing was like, fuck Blaine.
should we be saying the M word?
It feels like a slur, right?
It does feel like a slur.
She's using very the M slur.
it feels wrong to say it.
It sounds like something really come up with. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It sounds like something super racist that J.K. Rowling would come up with.
It's a fantasy slur.
Professor Mugwumps. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's bad. Okay, so Blaine openly campaigned for the presidency, which at the time was actually pretty unusual. You usually didn't campaign on your own behalf. Other people campaigned for you. His supporters often paraded around in armor, rich Republicans in the genuine medieval article topped with ostrich feathers, and poorer compatriots making do with a burlap and stove polish imitation.
Stove polish.
Yeah. So you had people cosplaying.
Does it get more poor than stove polish? Yeah. Okay. You know what? Actually, that's a little fancy. I'm like, homegirl's polishing her stove. I don't even do that.
There's just something about that image too of just the supporters dressing up and being so invested in Blaine as a person. Like, it again, very familiar to certain things today.
Dressing up with their fucking ostrich feathers.
With their feathers.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Where
being
do they get
like,
ostrich feathers?
Janice, we have to go buy some ostrich feathers so we can show that we stand this fucking weirdo.
The plumed knight. Yeah.
Like, where are they even getting them?
The first time you should have fucking stopped and self-reflected was when you're my boy is the plumed knight. That's when you should have been I'm a fucking weird nerd and maybe I need to go touch some grass.
I'm such a slut for the plumed knight. You need to take a step back.
I'm going to go have sex with my husband now because I need to blow up some steam.
Yep. There were some supporters who wanted Blaine to start a new branch of the Republican Party, and they were sometimes known as the Half-Breed Party. So that was actually one of his nicknames.
It is getting both closer to the J.K. Rowling slurs and also literally J.K. Rowling slurs.
Yeah.
Mudblood? Are we mudbloods now?
Mugwumps. The Mugwumps.
Oh, God. Okay.
Legit.
So he was sometimes known as the half-breed man or half-breed leader or something like that.
Oh, fuck.
No. And it's real... It's really yikes. It's a lot of yikes. There was also an incident where he was criticized where he attended a very lavish dinner and was praising prosperity under Republican rule at the same time that this was a period of depression and vast unemployment. So people were not thrilled with him.
Again, sounds par for the course.
Right. Yep. This campaign was absolutely vicious. There were multiple recounts, and Cleveland won over Blaine by a margin of 1,049 votes. It was extremely close.
Jesus.
And Thomas Nass was given some credit as being the reason why he lost. Blaine said of the campaign, quote, "The whole campaign was a disaster to me. I ought to have obeyed what was really a strong instinct against running. It was the wrong year and gave my enemies their coveted opportunity." So a little sour grapes about it. Just a little.
I accidentally happened to run at a bad time, which is not my fault at all. It has nothing to do with my campaign.
It's not it's linked to the other two times I ran and lost and didn't do well either.
Oops, yeah. I did it again. I lost the presidency.
Yeah.
That's so embarrassing. If somebody doesn't respond to one of my DMs, I'll just unfollow them, block them, and erase them from my memory. But this man literally failed to be the president multiple times and just kept coming back for more in the public eye. I could not.
Multiple times.
It's gotta be a kink, right?
Humiliation. Quite possibly. So some have compared the 2016 election between Hillary and Trump to this campaign, the 1884 one. Actually, one of my sources is an article explaining some of the comparisons. That there are people who vote, for example, so some of the comparisons, right, are there are people who voted for Cleveland because they felt he had the lesser amount of scandal. So the whole like choosing between supposedly the lesser evil kind of thing. Both Hillary and Trump were compared to Blaine during their campaign runs. Hillary for her alleged trying to erase her scandals and Trump for being anti-Muslim can be in comparison to Blaine being anti-Chinese. And then, of course, the mugwumps themselves, the ones that were against Blaine, being very similar to the Never Trump movement, essentially, of the mugwumps existing solely to not get Blaine into office. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting how so many comparisons have been made to this like ancient old timey kind of election and more recent events.
It's okay. A little depressing that, like, literally nothing has changed.
Yep. The more things people change, like, the more they say the same.
What a historic abuse of power. And it's like...
Yeah. So this is also why... One of the reasons why I found sharing this so interesting is that whenever you have people say now, like, oh, this isn't the Republican Party I grew up with, or, oh, things are so different it now is. In comparison. No, they're not. Like, this is the same old shit. Like... Arguably, maybe Blaine kind of helped to create the situation, but I don't know.
Well, like, Donald Trump, like, isn't even the most evil one. Like,
right. No,
this is
he's
like
not.
So par for the course, and he is so like center of the road.
Oh, he was just the loudest.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the most annoying and he was the rudest boy. But he is so like
yeah,
par
yeah
for
he's
the
just
course.
Like outright just like disrespectful, which I think is what pissed Democrats off more than anything. It's just like, you can't say that. That's rude. Like, we are used to people being very polite and smiling as they strip people of their rights. And that's what we expect.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I can excuse racism. I can't excuse being rude.
Yeah,
it's like, yes, you're doing a Muslim ban and that's bad. But have you considered that maybe being uncouth is worse?
Yep. No, you're nailing it. There's not much more after this. Like pretty much everyone after this, there's not much to talk about really. In 1889, he became the Secretary of State again, this time to President Harrison. But unfortunately, the end of his life, he did experience some tragedy. In 1890, he lost two of his adult children. So first his son Walker died, who was kind of like his right hand man. 2 weeks later, his daughter Alice died, and she left behind two children.
Oh, it's fucked up.
Do you know what they died of?
Yes. I couldn't find what specifically they died of. I'm guessing it was just like they caught a cold or something.
Yeah,
that sounds really disease. Mean, but like I assume it's just some kind of disease. Like,
I mean, you're not being mean. That's just science sucked.
Yeah, basically garbage. Having shit science. So following like just dealing with the grief of losing both of his children, plus apparently he had really strained relationship with Harrison. He ended up resigning. He also had really bad health around this time too. And again, this might be related to stress, the whole losing his children thing. But he had Bright's disease and circulatory and pulmonary disorders. So he was not doing very well. He resigned in 1892. That same year in June, he lost another one of his children, his son Emmons, I believe it was. And he died 6 months later on January 27th, 1893, which was 4 days shy of his 63rd birthday.
Okay. So God could have taken him sooner, but also he was still fairly young.
He was, I mean, 60. I mean, that's younger than my grandfather when he died. My grandfather died at 67. So that's definitely younger. And I mean,
what the fuck year was this?
That was 1893.
Did people live super long then? Like, I know that's not that far away. Like,
In the mid 19th century, I think the average age of death was like 36, but a lot of that was because of like warfare and stuff.
Yeah. If it's an average, then like infant mortality rates would bring
brings it down. Yeah.
Like, infant mortality.
If you live into adulthood and you're not like in the army, you would live into like your 80s.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It would just be like nasty. You're just living a nasty life because you like don't probably. Have toilets or internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would just suck. You'd want to die. You'd live a long time.
I'm like, do I want to live to like 80 back then? Like, that sounds disgusting, but okay.
Originally, he was buried in D.C., but he was then moved in 1920 to the Blaine Memorial Park, which is in Augusta, Maine. It is at the corner of Blaine Avenue and Green Street. I actually know the cemetery where he's at. I don't think I've ever been to his part where he is. Technically, he is gated off. Like, he and his wife, their stones are next to each other, and there's like a little gate around it. You could jump over that very easily, or you could just, you know, if you can aim well enough, you can just piss from the side. Don't get caught. So that's the story of James G. Blaine, the continental liar of the state of Maine. I had a list of all his like nicknames and I lost them all apparently, but one of them was something like the hyena man from Maine, the magnetic man,
did he have a weird
the plumed
laugh?
Knight. I think that was because like hyenas have this reputation of being like creepy and duplicitous, even though they're not, they're just animals. So I think that was kind of where it came from. I believe
the
I'm not sure. Maybe he had a
weird laugh. The continental liar of Maine sounds like a little like a patty cake game I would have played like when I was in elementary school.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. Mr. Continental liar. His pants are on
no,
fire.
No, not
fire,
the
fire.
The repeat on liar really sent me right the fuck back.
He was taken by NASS by a big magnet.
That's it.
That was the worst part of those like children's rhymes is that they were like, oh, we don't need to like actually think of a rhyme. We'll just repeat the word over and over again until we've like matched the amount of syllables.
Maybe that's why I never learned about Blaine in school is they didn't want us like repeating that stupid chant all the time. They just were scared that we would just sit there all the time, just being like, Blaine, the continental liar of Maine. Just didn't want that.
I mean, it's very kill the beastie. Yeah. Like, it's a little, like, calling someone a continental liar is already, like, it seems a little aggro.
It does.
It's like, bro, he's dead. Like, do we need to, like, be really, like, ragging on him like this?
I mean... We aren't we ragging on him right now? Isn't that the point of this podcast?
But I mean, like, do you need to teach that to literal babies? Like, isn't there anybody alive you could tell them this sucks? Like,
true.
I don't know. Is he really a continental liar? Does the entire continent care about him being a liar, or is it?
I mean,
is it just Maine?
Maybe it's just Maine. I don't know. Like, and again, like, I don't think I ever really learned about this guy. Like, maybe his name came up briefly in that way of just like, oh, hey, someone from Maine, like, almost became president. Woo. You know, technically, he's not even technically from Maine. He's from Pennsylvania. He just lived in Maine.
It sounds
I have
like
to make
he
that
got,
distinction.
Sounds like Maine the mad. People who hated him, like, it gave him more credit than he was actually due. Like, they were like, it's like the Never Trumpers or the, like, the Muggle-lumps or whatever the fuck you said earlier.
The Muggle-lumps.
Like, they're like, he's literally the worst person that ever lived and he's destroying the planet. And it's like, well, yeah, he's like a shitty, weird little man. Like, he's definitely not the worst person that's ever lived.
And he's from Maine.
Like he definitely we do have to give him quote credit in the sense that he helped to build the Republican Party in Maine, so like fuck him for that. But like he's not necessarily that much worse than any other Republican from Maine or elsewhere necessarily. Totally. But there is a lot of interesting comparisons between like the election of 1884 and then like Hillary and Trump and in 2016. Mm-hmm. So like that's kind of interesting. Again, the whole like the more things change, the more they don't. In terms of him as a person, it's interesting because it seemed like he had the kind of personality where you either really loved him or you really hated him, and there was no in between.
Did anybody love him? I don't remember that.
His family.
Story.
His. He was apparently was a really good father. His family loved him.
Okay, I'm like I don't remember that being brought up.
Kids were like, maybe I love you, Tootsie. I love you for giving me all the money, Tootsie.
Yeah, exactly. But no. supposedly his family loved him.
Supposedly his family loved him.
Supposedly, I mean,
allegedly.
I read a few quotes from them. I mean, some of them died. Let's face it. Like, we don't know. Like,
allegedly, I don't want to get sued for libel, but apparently he was loved.
I don't want the Blaine estate coming after me and coming after one of their native daughters.
He was not loved. How dare you? How dare you insinuate that his family loved him?
Some, like, great granddaughter of Alice pops up and is like, fuck you. He was worse. But yeah, so that's that episode. Thanks for listening, y'all. I'm glad it was really. I wanted to challenge myself this week to specifically find a shitty Mainer, and I was really happy to find this one. I was like, ooh, there's some
pity's garbage.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, it's terrible.
Even Maine has shitty people. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Respect the Dead. You can follow Respect the Dead on Instagram and Twitter @_RespectTheDead.
If you want to follow us individually, you can find our socials in the show notes. And you should check out our YouTube channels. We don't shit on dead people there as often, but still, we're making tons of cool stuff.
If you enjoyed Respect the Dead and would like to support us, there's a couple of ways to do that.
You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you found us. If you leave us a review, we can read it out on the podcast. Reviews are the best way for new listeners to discover the show. Give us at least 5 stars and then share us with a good friend who likes venting about dead people.
You can also give us some money over on our Patreon. Patreon supporters get some cool bonus content like bloopers from the cutting room floor and even coming up with a fake sponsor ad that we'll read in an episode. It has to be a fake business though, not your MLM, honey.
Thanks so much for listening. Join us every Monday for our next Worm Feast.
I'm Kellen Conrad.
I'm Mainly Mandy.
And I'm Hoots. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.